Hello, everybody. I'm Radio Johnny, and you are listening to Recovery Radio on KRFP 90.3 FM in Moscow, Pullman. Recovery Radio is recorded live at the Latah Recovery Center, located at 531 South Main Street in Moscow. You can contact the LRC by phone at 208-883-1045 or by email at latahrecoverycenter@gmail.com. You can also find them on the web at latahrecoverycenter.org and on Facebook. Recovery Radio's purpose is to share with our community how addiction and behavioral health disorders affect us all and how we deal with them. We also share the personal stories of people in and around recovery, highlighting their experience, insight, and hope for continued recovery. And like I said earlier, I am Radio Johnny, and in the studio / conference room with me today is Miss Denise. Hello, Miss Denise.
Hello, everyone.
How you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Yeah, it's good times coming up. We were just chatting before started recording, and all sorts of good things happen in your life. The calendar, if you want, you can go to the LRC website for a listing of all the events and meeting schedules. There are recovery meetings, there are yoga classes, there's guitar classes. There are all sorts of things, and they do include the events and things going on at Vandal Recovery.
They do.
Which we're going to, in the beginning of February, we're going to have Margaret on, Margaret Telford, who's the new coordinator of Vandal Recovery, and that should be a really great interview. I'm looking forward to it. Okay, and today, threw a spitball at the magic spinning wheel of topics, and I landed on dealing with family issues and healing that goes around them. And I'll kick it off a little bit here. Right now I'm dealing with some family health issues that are happening 1,000 miles away from where I live, and they're pretty serious. And you know, it's kind of stressful, you know, being so far away and not really being able to, like, contribute to any sort of help or healing or whatever when you're physically away from the situation. And compound that with a dear friend and sponsee of mine who slipped on the ice and broke his hip. Caveat that by also mentioning he's just gotten off of living on the streets, and he just got off the phone with him regarding the surgery he had to repair it, and seems like everything's good, and so, you know, thank God for that one. So, you know, there can be a lot going on in a person's life which can affect what's going on. So, you know, family issues can be anything from, you know, an abusive relationship to just what's going on in your family, you know, events, things that are going on that, you know, some may be planned, some may be unplanned, but they can all create stressors, you know, in our lives. And for me, the danger in that is my thinking gets so scattered when dealing with all those things that prioritizing things like, for me, like eating properly or at all, I can make mistakes there. I can screw those things up. So those are some of the things that are happening in my life. You know, I know you have had and have, you know, situations going on with you too, Denise. What basic rough thoughts do you have on that?
Yeah, I would say over this last 11 years of being in recovery and like learning how to do things differently and respond better and not making bad choices as far as like, you know, substance use and stuff like that during hard times. I've learned a lot of different things in walking alongside a family. And I think one of the most important things has been having a good support team and people to reach out to for help and just to share with and get meals brought over. But some of the things that I've faced are like, you know, hospital visits with my teenager, and my mom started having strokes a handful of years ago, and that was just really hard. She went from like basically being able to take care of herself to sometimes needing help, you know, getting to the bathroom in the middle of the night. It was really hard. And there was, I think it was at least 4 to 6 months where one summer myself and my daughter pretty much took turns taking care of her. And that was pretty intense, along with having, you know, two kids at home and working part-time and stuff like that. And I remember thinking a couple times, like, how am I responsible for this whole other adult, you know? It was just different. I mean, we take care of kids and stuff like that, but it was a different kind of a thing, taking care of your parent, which I think even though it was really hard and stretched me and sometimes I wasn't sure what I was doing, I did persevere through it. And I did have to kind of change around my schedule and stuff and reprioritize, like, what kinds of activities I could keep doing and what I needed to set aside for a little bit. But it was definitely challenging during that time. Also, you know, with kids and grandkids and things like that, there have just been some moments where it didn't necessarily seem like it was going to be okay. I have a family member who's a teenager that tends to take off. She's a kind of a runner. And we, you know, sometimes we don't know where she is. And it could take a half a day or a day to locate her. And honestly, that's a little hard. And, you know, there's mental health issues in the family with my kids. And navigating some of those things can be, there's just up and down moments, you know. There's definitely a concern of, like, are they okay today? And just making sure that communication is good and things like that. And adjusting supports when needed and things like that. Making sure we circle around to the doctor on medications and counseling and different kinds of things. And I feel like there's times in life with those with family where things tend to be a little bit smoother and where they tend to get a little bit more rocky. And it can just be really hard. And kind of as we were talking a little bit before we started on the air, I think that there's times when there's things that are so pressing on my mind with my family, typically, occasionally myself, but typically with my family, where it's hard to really think clearly. It's hard to remember other things or how to answer questions or how to plan because my mind is just so focused on this one thing, you know?
Right. Yeah. I have a very good example of exactly that, which drives my wife insane. When my mind is so filled up with all this noise going on, she'll ask me something, I'll respond to it. Then 20 minutes later, she'll ask me something about that question, and I'll have no idea what she's talking about. And I don't blame her. That would drive me insane, too. It's like, are you just not listening to me? And it's like, no, I'm listening to you. I'm just, for some reason, my brain's not processing things right now.
Yeah.
And even the most patient person, which she can be, you know, it would annoy them at least and drive them crazy at most.
Yeah.
So, you know, I need to be cognizant of that sort of stuff. So for me, you know, what's secure on that? And it's to try and be as present as possible, to be as in the moment, to block out the noise for the time being. And one of the ways I accomplish that is through my, you know, spiritual program, which is when things are overwhelming like that, and I know there's nothing I can do to have a positive effect on the outcome, mm-hmm. I have to do what? Give it to God. Mm-hmm. It's my concept of God. And just to release those thoughts for now, you know, knowing that, you know, I can't have a positive effect on anything, and just ruminating about it constantly is going to block my ability to be here and now, mm-hmm. and participating in my life as is necessary now.
Yeah.
So I don't know how a mother can block out concerns or worry about a child. That sounds impossible to me.
I think a part of it is like figuring out, are there next steps? I have my youngest is struggling with vaping. I think it's fair to say that she's addicted to vaping, which is really concerning to me. I know that smoking is really bad. I was a smoker for 31 years, and I quit that about 5.5 years ago. But honestly, I'm very concerned about all the other extra things that are in vaping. I really just don't trust it. And I've heard and seen a lot of different things with how it can affect teenagers within, you know, a small amount of time. I know that it's not like everyone, but I'm concerned. I'm taking her to the doctor tomorrow to talk about some things because I've tried some things with her, but I need resources. So instead of continuing to stress out about this, just taking the next step and seeking some professional guidance. I don't know what that will turn into, but that's just my next step about it because I'm concerned. And right. So I think that's part of it is like, talking to my trusted people in my life about what's going on. I have accountability people in my life and really close friends that's what we do. We meet each week and we talk about things going on. We pray for each other. We have compassion and listen. We're good listeners. So that there's this space that's safe where we can talk about things. And sometimes, you know, one of my lady friends has a great idea about something or they share an experience that they had, you know, and even in the processing of sharing about what's going on and my worries and fears about things, sometimes I come up with ideas because it's not all bottled up inside. But it also came to mind as you were sharing that, like, in that whole stress affects memory, I try to make sure I have like lists going and alarms, and I kind of incorporated that into my life in general, but that visual can really help me to stay on track when I'm really stressed and overwhelmed. And I tend to just think, what's the next thing I need to do? Like right now I got to set this thing down with my kid or a family member, you know, like right. You were sharing, and I'm just going to do this next thing for a little while. And then I'm going to circle back around to this because it is really hard to like carry right. multiple things at once and get anything done.
Right. Right. And effectively.
Effectively. And I was going to lastly just share like also just, you know, sharing with my loved one that maybe I'm struggling to interact with in a way of like being more present. Just say, you know, I'm just really noticing that this is affecting me in this way. I really care about you, but I'm just struggling with memory and paying attention, you know?
Right.
And then try, like you said, I thought that was really good. You were like, try to be present with your wife or whoever, you know, in the midst of all that. And I think I also try to remember to cry in the shower if I need to, or if it happens in public or at work or something like that, you know what? That's okay. There's this video that, what is her name? Tomlinson or whatever is her last name. She's a blonde comedian. She's hysterical. And she said, did you know that I heard that there's people whose like emotions just come up and just tap them on the shoulder and go, Hey, I need to feel these feelings, you know, like would like 5:30 be okay? Like when you get done work. And she's just like, oh yeah. 5:30. Okay. I'm going to pencil that in. She's like, did you know people have like polite emotions like that? Yeah. My emotions sometimes can be like, yeah, I'm going to cry in the shower later, but sometimes they just happen and they can happen at the grocery store or at work or at the weirdest moments. Sometimes I don't even know what's going to happen. And I just am sharing about something, burst into tears, you know? Mm-hmm. And I know that it's, you know, women tend to cry a little bit more than men, but I just want to encourage everyone that it's good to have that space to have emotions, that when we stuff them down for too long, after decades and decades, they tend to come out in a big mess all over the place. So I'm just saying.
Right.
And they pick up habits along the way. They're just like, oh, you're not going to pay attention to me? Let's pick up this to like numb it out, you know? And then the felonies and the misdemeanors and the upset family comes along with that. So yeah. Don't recommend it.
Behind.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I totally get what you're saying. And yeah, it's true. Women, I think, are better at expressing their emotions. And men tend to be stuffers. I'm almost 70 years old, so of course I grew up in that. I'll give you something to cry about generation, along with, right. You know, rub some dirt in it, and you don't cry because it's, you know, it's a sign of weakness. And none of that I subscribe to any longer. But I am probably just out of habit, tend to be more stoic. So when something rough happens, I go into a mode of, how would I explain it? I'm ready to act. You know, I become hyper vigilant. I want to like my friend didn't know. The doctor wasn't sure if he was going to do a hip repair or a hip replacement. So of course I had to go instantly on the web and read everything I could on the difference between a hip repair and a hip replacement. Was that necessary? No, but that's.
Did it make you feel better?
Yeah, that allows me to feel like I'm doing something. I feel like I have to act in some form or another. Now, in this case with the family member that's 1,000 miles away, it drives me insane. I'm 1,000 miles away. I'm getting feedback from other family members on what's going on because they have this person, you know, sedated. It's cancer. So they have them sedated and, you know, they can't, you know, they can communicate, but, you know, not real chatty. So it's like I'm getting the information so I understand what's going on. But, and even if I was there, I would know there's nothing I can do about this except go along for the ride. I've been through this before. My mother was diagnosed with cancer in September of 1989 and passed away in December. She had even had a full physical like 3 months before and nothing was wrong. So it hit her hard and fast. And she was actually living in our home in a little mother-in-law unit we had built in the downstairs. So I was there through all of that. At that time, I had the advantage of my friend alcohol to help me deal with the emotions of it, which of course is to say not deal with the emotions of it. This is probably the next most close person to me to be affected by this disease. And now I'm sober. And now I have to deal with it differently. It's not my first thought to go and get a drink to deal with it today. Thank God. Literally, thank God. But not having that tool to use means I'm experiencing a lot of different emotions right now that I have not dealt with before. And, you know, again, I thank God that I've been given the grace to sit back, understand what's going on, and be okay with it. Being okay with it for me is the hardest part because it goes against everything I've learned and I know. And part of my recovery program was they told me, you're going to have to unlearn everything you think you know because everything you think you know is wrong. And, you know, that's the unfortunate thing for the alcoholic. You know, we're dealing with the defective brain and being used to using a system that's equally defective and destructive at the same time. So what do I do? You know, what I do is I have to be patient. I have to be tolerant. I have to understand that there's two things that happen in sobriety, good things and lessons. And this is one of those times where this is definitely not a good thing, but it's a lesson. The problem is I didn't get a syllabus for what this class is all about. And I only have a minor understanding of the stuff that's in the class, and there's no book. And the only lectures I get are drips and drabs from doctors and hospitals and things like that. And Dr. Google, of course, you know, it's going to be very helpful for me in dealing with an understanding of what's going on. So, you know, it's complicated. It's complicated.
It is.
And I'm not, you know, I'm not a dumb guy, but, you know, I'm also not the smartest guy in the room. Not the sharpest pencil in the box, as my wife likes to say occasionally. Thank you, honey, for keeping me humble. So, you know, this is going to be a learning experience for me that I'm uncomfortable with. I'm trying to be as comfortable as I can right now.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because I've known you for some years now, and you walk alongside of a lot of people, and you're there for them at meetings and when they call you up. And, you know, occasionally I hear that's in the middle of the night. So you've been on this side of like supporting people, you know, in the past. I just want to encourage you to remember to reach out to people and ask for what you need.
Right.
Even just sharing what's going on. I don't know that we always know what we need, but just making sure that you're talking with people, just in the sense of hearing their voice, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I understand that. And
when I figured.
When I texted you the other day to talk about what was going on and this doing the show today, you replied back, you know, well, what do you need? And you capitalized the word you. So you know, I understand that. And, you know, I have been reaching out.
Good.
As unnatural as that is to me. It was the same thing that kept me drunk for so many years because I knew I was in trouble, but I didn't want to reach out. Well, part of that was my disease not wanting me to reach out. Now I have a capacity to reach out without any fears associated with it. Like, okay. Oh, what are people going to think of me? You know, or that old, you're weak if you ask for help, or you're supposed to be able to figure this stuff out on your own. And that's malarkey. And knowing who to ask to.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just reaching out to a friend and saying, yeah, things are really crappy right now. Mm-hmm. I'd use a stronger word, but we're on the radio.
I know.
Things are really crappy right now.
We have to bleep out my bad words.
And I feel like crap and I don't know what to do. And just maybe listen to, you know, what somebody else has to say about, you know, maybe they're the beauty of the Alcoholics Anonymous program is I have a wealth of people who have been through stuff that I have not.
Yeah.
And they have made it through to the other side. And if nothing else, they have some 20/20 hindsight into either what they did that worked well or what they did that didn't work at all. Mm-hmm. And both of those things can be some real damn important information.
Yes, definitely.
That I might need. Mm-hmm. So it's, yeah, reaching out, I mean, for anything. It can be a situation like what I'm in. It could be a situation where at work, you know, where you're, we have a friend who's dealing with an extremely difficult coworker, and is not getting the satisfaction that she's expecting from the management of her workplace. And, you know, it has to do with a lot of political stuff and, you know, it's something that, rightfully so, you know, she feels like she shouldn't have to deal with, and that's true, but you're there, you're in it. So, you know, you reach out to people, you know, and, you know, in her case, is like, am I crazy or is what's going on crazy? And it's like, no, you're not crazy. What's going on is crazy to a certain extent beyond your capacity to deal with it. You know, that's kind of getting away from family, but, you know, it does reflect that, you know, there's the family you're born into and then there's the family you build around you, you know, your church family. Your AA family, your NA family, your whatever A family, or just your close-knit friends that you've known since, you know, you were 12 years old or whatever.
Right.
You know, one of my greatest friends that I've known for over 50 years is also probably my closest confidant and a person that I honestly feel I can tell how I feel and explain it in a way that for some reason he seems to be able to decipher.
Right, because he's known you for so long.
Yeah, because it doesn't necessarily even make sense to me. It's like, I'm feeling stuff I've never felt before. What is this? You know, what's going on? What do you see? And equally, you know, when his wife was suffering her third round of cancer, we were on the phone almost daily, me walking with him through that and what that looked like and, you know, listening to how he felt about it. Very unnatural for two guys like us who grew up, in
rubbing
that.
Dirt in those emotions.
Right. Yeah. Right. We have one thing in common that I think liberates that from us. We're both in recovery from different things. He's more in recovery from, like a codependent lifestyle, which he learned growing up from his dysfunctional family. And, me from alcoholism, from growing up in my dysfunctional family, and whatever that genetic thing is that I believe in that affects people who drink too much. So there are families and there are families, and it's okay to reach out to them and
Absolutely.
Say, what the heck, what's going on? Hey, you know what? Why don't we take a short break? I'll plug in some music here and we'll come back and finish up with a few more thoughts. Sound good?
Sounds good.
All right. You are listening to KRFP 90.3 FM in Moscow Pullman, the coolest station in the nation.
Twas in another lifetime, one of toil and blood, when blackness was a virtue, the road was full of mud. I came in from the wilderness, a creature void of form. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. And if I pass this way again, you can rest assured I'll always do my best for her, on that I give my word. In a world of steel-eyed death and men who are fighting to be warm, come in, she said, I'll give ya shelter from the storm. Not a word was spoke between us, there was a little risk involved. Everything up to that point had been left unresolved. Try imagining a place where it's always safe and warm. Come in, she said, I'll give ya shelter from the storm. Burned out from exhaustion, buried in the hail, poisoned in the bushes and blown out on the trail. Hunted like a crocodile, ravaged in the corn. Come in, she said, I'll give ya shelter from the storm. Suddenly I turned around and she was standing there, with silver bracelets on her wrists and flowers in her hair. She walked up to me so gracefully and took my crown of thorns. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. Now there's a wall between us, something that's been lost. I took too much for granted, I got my signals crossed. Just pretend till it all began on a non-eventful morn. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. Well, the deputy walks on hard nails and the preacher rides a mount, but nothing really matters much, it's doom alone that counts. And the one-eyed undertaker, he blows a feudal horn. Come in, she said, I'll give ya shelter from the storm. I've heard newborn babies wailing like a moaning dove, and old men with broken teeth stranded without love. Do I understand your question, man? Is it hopeless and forlorn? Come in, she said, I'll give ya shelter from the storm. Little hilltop village, they gambled for my clothes. I bargained for salvation and she gave me a lethal dose. I offered up my inner innocence I got repaid with scorn. Come in, she said, I'll give you a shelter from the storm. Well, I'm living in a foreign country, but I'm bound to cross the line. Beauty walks a razor's edge, someday I'll make it mine. If I could only turn back the clock to when God and her were born. Come in, she said, I'll give ya shelter from the storm.
And we are back. You're listening to Recovery Radio on KRFP 90.3 FM, Moscow Pullman. I'm Radio Johnny. She's Denise. Hi, Denise.
Hi.
And we've been talking about, family matters, our mental health and dealing with problems, situations, frustrations, all sorts of concerns related to, family and how we deal with them. I've certainly whined on long enough about some of the stuff I'm going through right now. And Denise, you've eloquently shared, the struggles that you've experienced, recently and in the past. So I think the important direction to go in now is to, kind of wind this up by talking about what do you do about it? And you have some great thoughts on that. So I'll throw it to you.
Sure. So in the midst of some of these things with family, sometimes we're well connected with different things that we're doing throughout the week. Sometimes we're not. So I'm just going to throw it out there kind of with both. So for instance, if you're a person in recovery, going to a meeting, whether that would be AA, NA, restoration night, just having coffee with a friend or something and talking, coming to the Lake Tahoe Recovery Center and talking with a recovery coach or someone in the lobby. Of course, we have the crisis center here. If you are in the midst of a crisis, and something needs to, you need to talk to a counselor immediately. I do want to reference back to that a recovery coach here or a peer specialist can get you connected with some things like a counselor and some supports, but just showing up and going to a meeting or something, church, different kinds of things that you're involved with, calling a friend, texting a friend. I mean, it can literally look like I can text a friend and be like, I'm not okay,
Right.
Can you call me or text me when you have time?
Right.
Just doing something like that. We have a lot of technology. There are Zoom meetings online that you can look up as well. Again, feel free to call here at the Recovery Center if you need some suggestions.
Right.
Even just a call. You don't even have to come here.
Right.
Even just a phone call.
208-883-1045.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. And somebody that answers the phone can direct you to some options and things. I think it's just important to not just sit totally alone in things. I think the overall reaching out to someone is very valuable and being able to express what's going on in your life and have someone listen.
Not only do I follow what you're saying, but something popped into my mind when you said, rather than just sitting with something
right. Alone,
I have, and do occasionally experience what I refer to as personal paralysis, where something becomes so overwhelming
or confusing
or just heavy that I'm literally frozen in place and cannot make a decision on what to do next. And I know from my experience that is when I recognize that I'm in that space, that's when I absolutely need to reach out somewhere, something, and just share that. And again, for me, that's really hard. I'm not wired that way. you know, either through conditioning or, you know, who knows, maybe it's that part of my reptile brain or something. I don't know. But yeah, it's really difficult.
I got one that I just thought of. So, there's helplines. There's a handful. SAMHSA's national helpline is 1-800-662-HELP, which is 4357.
Don't they have like a three-digit?
There is some three-digit number ones for helplines. And again, if you...
I mean, suicide prevention.
Right.
But you don't need to go that deep. There are, like you said, that helpline that you referenced there.
Right. Here's another one. Mental health crisis help, 888-828-6539. There's just a bunch. If you Google helplines, you can find a lot of different kinds of things. And there's everything from just like, you know, somebody to be able to talk to. There's also text lines that you can call too. So somebody just be able to talk to, or if you're in a crisis, like there's different kinds of
there's different levels. You
there
know,
really is.
You know, if you're mm-hmm. not, if you don't feel you're suicidal, but you're struggling with some mm-hmm. sort of situation.
I found it. It's 988 Lifeline if you need emotional support.
988.
988. There's one of them. Yep.
Write that down. 988. Lifeline.
If you need to talk, 988. Lifeline is here.
Yeah. So, and
we're here too.
You know, it was funny, early in my recovery, we make a joke in AA when people come in, it's the practice of most of the groups in this area. And this is, it's not universal, but I've seen it a lot in other places. We have a little threefold piece of paper that has a listing of all the meetings in the area and phone numbers for a district and area and a helpline, or an AA hotline rather, but also has a place on one of the folds for people's names and phone numbers.
Right.
And men put down their number for men, women do them for women. And we encourage people to, you know, make that call before you take that first drink. And it's so funny. The joke is that we talk about how the telephone weighs 500 pounds.
Right. During that time, I was like, it's so far.
Yeah.
As my teenager would say.
Yeah. That's so far away.
It's so far.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, I mean, you know, even reaching out. And I think you were sharing, you know, if you have your groups, sometimes there's a temptation for me when I'm in a group and there's a topic to be thinking about what I'm going to say. And when I'm in that mindset, I'm not hearing what everyone else is saying.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, to be able to quiet myself, stop that mm-hmm. thinking that, oh, I got to say something so cool or important
listen.
Or whatever,
yeah.
is to really listen and really hear what's saying, because that's how, again, I'll use the G word, that's how God speaks to me,
mm-hmm.
is through all the rest of these carbon-based life forms that we call people. I get the answers I need. Oddly enough, the other day, I was my friend in California called me up, and he was just talking about doing another fourth step, and which is making a searching and fearless moral inventory of himself. And he was asking some questions about it, and it's basically what we're doing is we're dealing with resentments we have and the resulting anger, frustration, whatever comes out of having those, which is unhealthy for an alcoholic like me. It can actually kill. So we talked about that for an hour and a half. The next morning, Sunday morning, I go to my Sunday morning group, and what does some random guy who's never been to our meeting before suggest the topic of resentments? It's like, oh, okay. You know, I remember what I said last night. Let's see if anybody else reflects what I said. Or maybe I'm going to learn something, which I did. And guess who I was on the phone with that afternoon going, hey, you know, I heard something.
Right. Yeah, let me share that with you.
You know, so, I mean, he reached out. And then God sent me to school. And then he had me call back and report in.
Yeah.
So, you know, just being available, well, in AA we call it the how. Honesty, openness, and willingness, having an open mind, be willing to take in what other people say and be honest with yourself about what that really means to you.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
You know, and I know your Christian recovery group mm-hmm. works with the same.
Absolutely. We're working on, like, you know, identifying the things we need to work on, taking the steps to change it. What's the underlying issues underneath those kinds of things?
Yeah.
So we can heal that up and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so much harder too, because, you know, it's funny. I've talked to people, you know, like yourself, that are dealing with, you know, a whole plethora of different, what do you call it, hurts, habits, and hang-ups.
Yeah.
And I'm like, geez, I'm sure glad I just have to deal with my insane alcoholism.
Yeah.
Because that sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, it's
not that I couldn't use it.
I've heard this and I agree with it. So we get hurt by people and we find healing in community, and we're probably going to heal in the community that doesn't have that particular person in it, and that's okay. But the way for us to trust again and to heal from our hurts and things like that is to heal in community with other people. Yeah. And as I've done that, then I've been able to interact better with people who have hurt me. So
there you go.
And forgive them as well.
Yeah. There you go. There you go.
Set that down.
Yeah. And forgive them. Whoa.
Yes.
Yeah. That's, yeah. Snuck it into that.
And come up with boundaries. What?
What are boundaries? Really?
I know.
I'm amazed.
Learned about that too.
Hey, you know what? We're about up against the clock. And you know what? Before we go, I want to kind of throw in a tease here. Next week, we will have a woman named Valerie Russo in to interview. She's got an incredible history with counseling and dealing with people with traumas. She's worked for both the Washington State University, excuse me, God, bite my tongue, and the University of Idaho, helping students and staff deal with different issues. And it's going to be fun and exciting to talk with her about that. I've known her for, I don't know, a little over a year now. She's really a fascinating individual with a wry sense of humor. So looking forward to that. And now I will close it off by saying thank you, Denise, for being available and sitting in on this with some really great information. And I will close it out with the usual. You know, if you think you have a problem with behavioral health or substance abuse issues, you do. The singer.